What is your name?
My name's Brandon Grigsby.
And where do you live?
I live north of Ashland, approximately 10 to 13 miles.
Okay. What's your occupation?
I am a loan officer for Stock Drawer State Bank and also run some cattle on the side.
Okay. How old are you?
Turned 40 in July.
Okay. When did you first become aware of the Starbuck Fire, hereafter referred to simply as the fire in general?
You know, it started that morning. People were talking about it at the bank, and we were getting some smoke coming from southwest portion of the county with the winds that were howling out of the southwest all day, carrying that smoke this way towards Ashland. So between that and just visiting with customers, we kind of were aware of the general vicinity.
What was your first reaction when you heard about the fire?
First reaction was I was thinking that we have a good volunteer fire crew that are well versed in dealing with fires of this type, of grass fires of this type, a lot of experience on our fire department, and between us in Oklahoma and Inglewood and many old fire departments, I really thought they'd have it under control before it got anywhere near it did. But the winds were so massive that they just flat couldn't get ahead of it.
Yep. So. What were your first thoughts and actions when you learned that the fire was getting close to where you lived?
You know, the bank, they evacuated town and got the bank shut down about 3 o'clock. And at that time, the winds were still howling out of the southwest pretty hard and bringing it towards Ashland while they were evacuating Ashland. I started driving home over Mount Jesus, on the Mount Jesus Road to the east of Ashland, going north, northeast from Ashland. And noticed that there was some smoke in the skyline clear up north, which was a separate fire from the original Starbuck fire down south. And that got my attention, especially when you get up on the Mount Jesus Road, up where Mount Jesus is at. You can see a long ways. And so I was on my way home when I saw that smoke line and started calling some ranchers up in that country that I had phone numbers of and asking them which way that was going. And mainly because I knew all the fuel around my house was unbelievable from the past couple of summers that we had. We had some fantastic summers and had some massive weeds and grass in the fields around my house.
So you have mostly pastures around where your house is?
It is. It's mostly grass or pasture, and then I've got right immediately around where my house is actually CRP. That's a 2-year-old stand of Conservation Reserve Program grass that had some massive 6-foot-tall weeds in it. Things like that, just being a young stand of grass. So there was a huge, huge amount of fuel there around my house.
So did you have lots of cattle around your house?
I did. Not immediately around my house. My cows were on the winter grass, which was about a mile to the west of my house, a little pasture over there that I try to winter in. It's got some canyons in it and makes a good winter home for them. And that's where I was calving out at the time.
So what types of things did you do to protect your property?
When I first got home, I'd talked to several of the ranchers up there on that north fire, and they all thought north of the Tablelands up there, north of Clark County Lake, the southwest wind was kept pushing that fire that way, and they thought they were going to get it with tractors and disc and can kind of contain it and get it pushed up into the wheat fields between there and Buckland. And so I didn't really think it was that we were in immediate danger. Because that's probably about 8 miles to the north of me. And visiting with those guys, they didn't really seem that stressed about the north fire at that time. We were mainly worried about the one coming from the south. And our area has a history of winds dying down once it gets dark. And so that fire becomes a lot slower moving and is actually controllable. So when I got home, I'd already talked to these guys and thought that the north fire was going to stay north. And then we had quite a bit of time before the south fire got there. So I decided to have my wife and daughters pack some stuff up just in case. And because it was moving away from us, and the only thing we had to worry about is a slow burning backfire, burning really slow and gradual into the wind. If the winds would have kept the way they were or even died, we probably had, a normal fire with no winds, probably, almost 6 to 8 hours, 12 hours before we'd ever even got to my place. In a normal fire situation. Because of that, I decided to have my daughter, my wife, and my daughters go ahead and pack just in case, and had my 11-year-old son at the time, Britt, come help me move cows. And So I jumped on the four-wheeler, and he jumped in the feed truck, and we went out to the west pasture and started moving cows. But luckily, a neighbor of mine, Danny Rich, called me and asked what I was doing. He said, well, he said, I'll just come over and help you. So he showed up on his four-wheeler, too. Now he lives about 3 miles to my southeast on up Bluff Creek. And he showed up to help me. And, you know, when we got out there to the pasture to move our cows, I was literally calving at the time. Had two new brand new babies down in some canyons in that pasture. That pasture has some draws in it. Grass gets above your head, just big rank grass in all the draws, mm-hmm. Where those cows were calving. And so we were off four-wheelers looking for calves and trying to get everything start moving. I even debated, because the fire was so far away and going the opposite way at the time, the north fire anyway, whether to even move them or not. And deciding, since we were there, to go ahead and move them, we were going to move them about 3 miles to the southeast to wheat pasture, mm-hmm. that my father-in-law owns. But so we started moving them, and Britt was honking the horn and drawing them out of the canyon, and Danny and I were on the four-wheelers trying to get everything found and baby calves found and out of the weeds so that they'd follow their mothers. And that's when the wind switched out of the north. And when it switched out of the north, it switched out of the north with a vengeance. Went to the point where we couldn't even hardly talk 4 or 5 foot apart because the wind was howling so bad.
And how soon did the smoke show up?
We just had gotten out of the pasture. We were just about out of the pasture. We couldn't find all the newborn babies in that tall grass. When that wind switched, that smoke immediately, I mean, within 5 minutes of it switching, the smoke immediately started coming our way, and you could smell it, and it started burning your eyes. And you immediately knew that approximately, you know, who knows, 7, 8, 10, 15 mile long backfire line that was burning to the southwest back into the wind, that became the head fire. And that thing was moving just unbelievably fast. And so we left with whatever we had. And got them going, drove out of that pasture. Britt was leading them in the pickup. I had my phone stuck in my shirt pocket on speakerphone talking to Britt. I had a newborn baby calf that couldn't hardly walk very good yet across my lap on the four-wheeler. And Danny was pushing cows, and I was pushing cows, and we started moving them across the field. And got about, half a mile from the pasture that they were in, out in my CRP field, between there and my house, and that's when the smoke fire got close enough, and the smoke got so bad you just flat couldn't hardly see.
Could you breathe?
Not very good. It was burning your eyes and burning your lungs pretty bad. And we were moving them, and all of a sudden the cows blew up back on Danny and I and started running back past us, back to the pasture where we just come from. And my dog took off after him. I had him on the four-wheeler with me. He usually rides with me, and he took off after him. And finally, the smoke and the wind kind of cleared enough where I could see. I was talking to Britt. I said, Britt, what's going on? The cows are coming back. And all of a sudden I could see my older daughter, Reese, on a four-wheeler with her friend, Grant Gillum. And they were on their four-wheeler, and they came out to help us. Well, they couldn't see where we were at and the smoke coming out to help us, and spooked the cattle back over us. In the wind, I was screaming at her, and finally got close enough to where they could hear me. I said, you guys, it's too dangerous. You just go. Get out of here. And I turned to go back after the cows were the last I saw them in the smoke running through the weeds, and that's when Danny and I collided with our four-wheelers because we couldn't see each other. And kind of tipped mine over a bit, and I caught it with my foot, but I lost the calf off my lap. And I'm yelling in my phone, and I got Britt to just go, get out there on the county road and get out of here because it's getting too dangerous. And I heard him say, Dad, the smoke's too bad. I can't see anything. I said, Bud, you just keep driving on the trail. Go straight ahead, and you'll get down on the county road, and you just keep going. And by then I grabbed the calf by the back legs and drug him back on my four-wheeler, and Danny took off after cows another way. He saw him go, and I went off in the smoke in a different way. And I'm yelling at Britt, are you okay? Are you okay? And no answer, and I reached down in my pocket, and my phone was gone.
Uh-oh.
So I didn't know where he was at or his status, and I didn't know or my daughter was for sure, and I finally ran into some cows and got them kind of going back the direction I thought they should go, and finally found the fence line and Danny, and anyway, we got them kicked out on the road, and started moving them down through the road through there, and father-in-law shows up, and I find that fire was coming so hard and so fast, it was jumping the road behind us.
Could you see flames?
Oh yeah, the flames were treetop high, swirling into the air. There were tumbleweeds, you know, going as high as the REA lines, on fire. It was unbelievable, and never seen something moving that big and that fast. Anyway. You know, burned a lot of years in the Flint Hills and never even come close to anything like this, because of course you're burning when there's no wind, and that wind was just unbelievable.
Did it keep switching, the wind?
You know,
the way that it was going.
It really literally moved from up there, clear up there by the lake. Because when in my west pasture, we were on a hilltop. Danny and I again were sitting there talking about whether we needed to move them or not. 30 minutes before that, mm-hmm. probably. 45 minutes before that, and all of a sudden it's crossing the road behind us.
So were you able to save any of the cattle?
Got most of my cows moved. I did have some behind my house on the creek too. I had some in the west pasture that were calves we couldn't find. A couple cows that we lost in the fire and smoke that we didn't get gathered back. But most of them we got out on the road and got moved. And I never could get back in time to get to the pasture, because then I got to worrying about my family. Mm-hmm. So I didn't have my phone. You know, back to my house, my father-in-law come through the smoke and flames in his pickup. I ran into the house making sure nobody was there. I knew the vehicles were gone. I was praying that Reese didn't run back on foot leaving the four-wheeler, because I found her four-wheeler in her county road abandoned. I didn't know where her and her friend Grant went. I got back to the house, and there was two vehicles there that I knew my wife had gone, because her vehicle was gone. But I was terrified that Grant, that Reese went back, and I didn't have no idea where Britt was in his vehicle. The flatbed that he was in wasn't there. Luckily, my father-in-law was there and had his phone. Mm-hmm. When I got back to the house, my house was on fire. It was burning a hole in the wall about the size of a 50-gallon drum. Kind of strange, but it was on the northwest corner of the house, on a porch area. And I think what must have been was maybe one of the fireweeds, tumbleweeds coming through the air, must have got caught against some porch furniture and sat there and burned and started burning the siding. So, but it was already into the studs, through the outward wall and into the studs, and about the size of a 50-gallon drum, and it was melting. The whole house, the siding was drooping and melting off from the heat. Mm-hmm. Went inside the house was full of smoke, screaming, nobody was there. Run back out, well wasn't working. So father-in-law he grabbed out of the back of his pickup some antifreeze jugs. I grabbed some out of the shed along with the dog water pan that was there. Threw all those on them, and then I started running down to the stock tank back and forth with buckets. And went down in the basement and threw a bunch of water on the seal plate and went into my bedroom, because that's where the other side of the wall is, and I was throwing water on the wall in there too. And somehow we got it put out and saved my house. Other than just the hole through the wall where it burned. But I couldn't believe it with the way it burned those rafters, right, or the studs in the wall right there.
So was the fire past your house then?
Yes. It was already out in another field. When we moved the cows, we got over to, by the time we got to my mailbox, there was a T in the road there, and we were going east. And it crossed the road behind us. And it was over in the pasture to the other side of us. And it was slowly burning on when it got into that pasture. The head fire went on, but there was a portion burning slowly back towards the other direction, more towards the east. And this wheat field, I had to go south to get to the wheat field. Well, we couldn't have went on east anyway, because by then the fire, another portion of the fire was coming up Bluff Creek. And was going over the REA poles there and rolling over the bridge there at Bluff Creek and going up that draw. Bluff Creek there has wheat on each side of Bluff on the south side of the bridge anyway. It gets over into some hardened ground, and it had wheat on both sides of it. but it was going up the grass draws along the creek right there, coming off that pasture and grass across my winter or my pasture behind my house. And it pushed us to the south. We went on another half a mile, moving my cows, got them into the wheat pasture there. And I look up, and the smoke was so bad you couldn't hardly see, but I looked up, and a bunch of Miller's cows were coming, which is to the west side of that road, Mount Jesus Road, there, because we had to go south from my road. In Miller's pasture, there were a bunch of cows coming through there, and the fire was pushing up towards the fence. And so I threw the gate open, and my father-in-law, Danny, went on home because it was going up to his place, going towards his place. So he went home to get his wife ready and get everything out of there. And I thought, well, we'll just kick those cows across the road with mine. So we went around one side, and Brad took his pickup around the other side next to the flames, and we got cows pushing. Heat was unbearable. I mean, it felt like it was burning the hair off your face, your eyebrows and everything. It was just unbelievable heat coming off of it and the smoke. And through the smoke, all of a sudden, come a bunch of black cows, which I figured out were mine, come off the wheat pasture, heard Miller's cows, and decided to run into the field with theirs. Mm-hmm. Back in the smoke, kind of towards the direction where they'd come and left their baby calves.
Yeah.
Finally got everything turned and back through there. As the fire was coming up to the fence, we got everything back on that little wheat field of my father-in-law's, and I yelled at him to go help Danny, and then I was going to stay there and hold these cows, keep them from running back in that pasture that was on fire.
Right.
He took off down the road to help Danny, and I was on a four-wheeler there trying to hold cows. Heat and smoke got so unbearable coming across that field. It was actually, even though there were some REA poles in the wheat field there, it was a little 18-acre patch of wheat with grass on both sides of it. That little old field just wasn't big enough to keep you away from the heat and the smoke.
Right.
And I couldn't hardly breathe. And I couldn't see where I was going, but I knew there was a stock tank in the fence line. So I followed the stock tank around to this fence, or the fence line around to the stock tank, found the stock tank, and I got off the four-wheeler and jumped in to get my clothes soaking wet. And then I used my shirt to breathe through, my wet shirt to try to filter some smoke and breathe through it, and got the ash. My eyes were on fire, and it felt like, and so they were burning. I got all that ash out of my face and out of my soot, out of my eyes and everything. And then I got back on the four-wheeler and drove out. As it was coming up to the tank where this grass was, I jumped out of the tank and got back on my four-wheeler and drove back out in the wheat field and used my shirt to breathe. And then stood and sat there probably for another 20 minutes, and my father-in-law come back through the flames and the smoke in his pickup, and I got in the pickup with him.
So where'd you find your family?
Everything was calmed down. I used his phone. Brad told me as soon as he got there, he told me he'd already talked to her and everybody was fine, including Britt. Mm-hmm. When he showed up, that put everything at ease, of course, and so I called her immediately. She was already over at Coldwater with all the kids, including Tanner Gillum's kids, Garrett and Grant Gillum. Tanner had sent them up there to help me, thinking he was sending them away from the South Fire where they'd be safe. We didn't have any idea this North Fire was going on at the time, or especially that a north wind was going to come through, a northern front was going to come through like that. So I ended up inadvertently sending them up there right in front of another fire coming. And again, if I'd have known there was a northern front, Britt would have never been out there either, and my family would have been gone. I would have probably never moved the cows. But we thought we had all kinds of time and no problems. But she was really shook up. Of course, my father-in-law had already called her and told her that I was safe, that I was okay. But when I finally called her, had to talk to Britt a little bit. Britt, when I lost my phone, he lost contact with Danny and I, and he thought Danny and I had died. And, you know,
So you had to kind of console him?
Yeah.
Talk him through it, make sure he knew you were okay?
So
did you guys go to Coldwater, or did you...
No, to tell his side of it, he continued on driving out to the road, called my wife. My wife, leaving, had found, in the smoke, had found, my daughter, my 14-year-old daughter, Reese. She had Cashley, my 6-year-old, with her. And my 14-year-old daughter, Reese, she'd thrown the gates open on the horse pens when she left so they could get out. And then just drove to the road. Well, then found them on the four-wheeler after I'd turned them around.
Right.
And they jumped in with her, so they left the forwarder there. That's why the forwarder was abandoned where it was at. And then she was already past the east of the Lexington building, almost to the curves to where you go to Coldwater, north of Protection, when Britt calls her and says, "Mom, I've lost contact with Dad. I think he and Danny must have died, and he was pretty broke up." And she's like, "Britt, you just got to get out of there. Keep driving. And he's like, "Well, I don't want to leave him." And she goes, "They're going to be fine. You just keep driving." And she said, "I'm turning around for you right now." She said, "Where are you at?" And she told him, and he told her, they said, "Well," he said, "I don't know." He said, "I think I'm on my way to Buckland." But he said, "I can't see where I'm going."
Mm-hmm.
And she said, "Well, do you slow down and open your door? Are you on a gravel road?" And he slowed down. He said, "Yes, I'm on a gravel road," but he said, "I can't see where I'm going." He said, "I'm just trying to just keep it between the ditches." He said, "I'll see a little bit of ditch once in a while." She said, "You just keep driving." She said, you get to the highway and turn and go to the Lexington building." She said, "I'm coming back. I'll meet you there." And she said, when she's pulling up to the Lexington building, she said she finally saw some headlights coming, and it was his headlights. It should have been, you know, bright as noon out by then. I mean, it was only 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, something like that in the evening, 4:30, whatever it was at the time.
Smoke all over the
but
place?
But the smoke was so bad, yeah. I mean, it had headlights on. It just looked like night out. And so she got him in. They left the pickup there, and he jumped in with her, and then they all went to Coldwater and stayed safe there.
So was it white smoke, gray smoke, black smoke?
Both. A little everything, yeah. But it was coming right off the fire, it was kind of a darkish grayish black. And then you get up higher into the sunlight, and it was a little lighter.
And where they were at the Lexington schoolhouse, was there fire around them?
Not at that time. The fire was to the north of them still there, and to the south and west of them there. The head fire had already went down through there. And so there at the Lexington Community Building, it didn't get to that building right there because there were some wheat fields to the north of it and had to burn slow back through draws and things like that to get to the Lexington Building. It probably didn't get there until after dark. But the head fire by then was already way south.
So what about Danny's place?
Danny's place, after a father-in-law come back for me, and we'd done everything there at the house. We went over to Danny's place, and my father-in-law decided he was going to go help or go check on someone else, and I went to Danny's. And Danny and I, the rest of the night, stayed north of his house on Bluff Creek there, and it burned real slow going through Bluff Creek north of his house because there was a wheat field north of his house, too, that buffered his house, and it was going slower up Bluff Creek. And so it was dark before. It was really dark, not just the smoke dark. It was actually the sun had set by the time it was getting closer to his house. And he has a spray rig on one of his pickups, and we were out fighting the fire with that the rest of the night.
So did you feel the temperature change?
We did. When that northern come through, it was unbelievable. But then the heat from the fire, you really didn't notice it until the head fire had already passed.
Were you still having a lot of trouble breathing?
I was. My voice was hoarse for probably 2 weeks afterwards. My eyes burned for at least 2 weeks from all the smoke and all and ash and everything. It was intense, pretty wild. I've never seen anything like it in my life. I've burned a lot of country, even the Flint Hills. I'm helping ranches burn country, and I've never seen anything like this in my life.
So so you have some experience with doing that. How does this compare to like a control burn? Completely different?
Completely different. That fire literally went, 8 miles in just a few minutes, 30 minutes. And went, 20 miles in a matter of an hour and a half, 2 hours. And not just a little quarter mile head fire, a 20 mile long head fire went that far in that short of time. It was just unfathomable that it moved like that, that fast. I've never seen a fire move that fast, that widespread. But that northern front pushing that long back fire line, and I'm sure it did the same thing with the south fire then when the wind switched too, and the two fires kind of came in on Ashland. I the way it was burning the rest of the night, I went and checked on some other neighboring properties. Steve Stevens ranch started burning later that evening, and he was already out. I went into the feed yard and asked some feeders. They had wheat on the north side of their property as well as on the west side, which protected the Ashland feed yard. And Ashland Feeders feed yard, and I went in there and washed my face real good, probably about 2 o'clock in the morning, and tried to clean up and clean my eyes up. Then I tried to make my way back across the country towards Ashland, so I kept going back home all night long, making sure the fire didn't start up and hoping that my dog would show up again that was helping me move cattle, but he never did show up all night long. Went ahead and my wife and them made their way back into protection and stayed with Janelle Kay at Neil Kay's place. And they're in protection, even though they'd evacuated protection by evening, late evening, 1, 2 o'clock in the morning. They'd finally, the head fires had passed except for some small backfire spots. They made their way into protection, stayed there, and felt safe enough to do that. I finally, about 3 o'clock in the morning, Danny's place was fine. Was content that my house was not going to start back on fire, so I decided. But it was still full of smoke, no power, of course, nothing. So I decided I was going to go ahead and try to make it into Ashland and at least catch some sleep at a friend of mine's house here in Ashland. Even though Ashland had been evacuated by then, the fire had fired already past it.
Right.
Tried to get through. High lines were down on the roads all over because of the power lines burned off, or the power poles burned off, so I couldn't get back to Ashland by any of the roads, no matter which way I went, direction I went. Backtracked clear around up by Clark County Lake. Couldn't go that way. Bridges were burned out up there. And Deputy Sheriff even lost a patrol car up there in one of those bridges later on. But came back across and started using trail roads that I knew to get to town across pastures. And, of course, there were still fires going on all around these pastures down the draws. Trees that were still burning, even though the grass was burned off by then.
Right.
Past hundreds of head of cattle standing there, completely burned up, either dead or still alive and walking blind because their eyes were burned out of them. Got just north of Ashland on the lake road, and through the smoke, because of all the spots still on fire, that even in my headlights, the smoke was so bad you couldn't hardly see until you were on something. Right up on, about to hit something, just kind of keeping it between the ditches. And all of a sudden, a power line bounced off the top of my pickup, just north of town, just north of where Mary and Mark Cottonball's place would be. And finally got into town probably about 3 o'clock and got into to my friend's place there. And, of course, the town was evacuated except for a few emergency vehicles and a few people that stuck it out. Friend told me where his key to his house was, and so I just went and stayed at his place, took a bath, and face was blistered up on my nose, on my cheeks. Finally scabbed over a few days later, but that was pretty intense. Went back the next morning, made my way back through the pastures up to my house. Of course, REA poles were still down, lines were still down across the road, so I had to cut across pastures. Looked like Mars. And
was there a lot of ash, or was it gone?
It was still there at the time. Everything was covered in black ash, except for sand. I mean, you could see sand or ash.
Uh-huh.
Sand or ash was it. Mostly gravel and ash, or gravel and sand. I mean, the wind was blowing so hard, a lot of the ash and soot ended up in the canyons, in the draws, in the ditches. I went back, got back to my place, and Heather and them come back across country from protection and met me at our house about 9 o'clock in the morning. And we looked at the damage there on the house and outbuildings and tractors burned up and things like that at my house.
Did you lose a lot of buildings?
One of our implement sheds, it melted the insulation out of it and the skylights, it melted them, bowed them out like bubbles. It's pretty wild, but, it was all steel, so the structure was still there. My garage is all steel, so that structure was still there. Burnt, you know, clear around my house and burnt a hole through the wall. Lost all my trees around the windbreak to the south of my house. Lost all my massive cottonwood trees, kids' playhouse in one of their trees, in an old, 100-year-old hick, what's it called? hickory, well, I can't think of what it's called now, but hackberry tree in the backyard. Lost several of them, based on big cottonwoods in the trees. Part of the reason we put our house there. All my fences, of course, were down. My corrals, most of them were made out of railroad ties that I'd bought off the railroad and dug the holes and put in. Burnt 99% of those out. Had all my corrals on the ground.
Did you lose any horses?
My horses, I found them about 3 o'clock in the morning on the county road to my east of my house, about 3 miles down by Ashland Feeders. And they were where they were standing on the road at. There was a wheat field to the north of them. That Ashland Feed Yard had some stalkers on that they were grazing. So I got out and laid the fence, pulled the post and laid the fence on the ground and ran them over into that wheat field and put the fence back up to leave them there. But there they didn't have a burn hair on them. My horses were fine. Apparently they ran down the road and got away from it and got in front of that wheat field to where they were okay.
Yep.
But I didn't know, have any idea where they were at until about 3 o'clock in the morning. The next day when I did get back, we started counting cattle and things that were dead. I can't remember
did
what
you
I
have
lost
to
now.
Shoot?
Had to, well... Crazy wild thing is, all these cattle that were standing there, still even breathing, that didn't make it through it, that were just blind, no hair on them, looked like a bald mouse, you know, and just suffering, just trying to sit there and breathe, couldn't walk, couldn't see, you know, it just made you sick. Calves burned off; they were just stripped bald of their hair, just looked like a leather handbag sitting there curled up when they were burned up. Found one heifer that I shot that didn't make it. One cow that shot that didn't make it as well. And had to shoot them, put them out of their misery. They were way beyond any kind of help. But, you know, we got out to my west pasture to look at, to see what all how many we left and missed and how many we missed when they blew up on us. And my dog pops up out of one of the draws. And... anyway, and the kids were cool with me at the time, and they were just, you know, elated. Opened the door, he comes running and jumps in the pickup, and there was not a burn hair on him. And probably 5 minutes before we found him, I was driving across the field, and there was a dead canine burned up just like those calves. Got out, thought, there's Doc. Well, my blue heeler didn't have a tail, and he only had 3 legs from being hit the year before. And I'd have a leg amputated, so I get out, and it had 4 legs and a tail. I'm like, well, that's a coyote. That's not him. And then about 5 minutes later, he shows up, and there wasn't a burn hair on him. So I don't know if he got in the pond or where he rode it out, but he was perfect. Found dead deer, found dead coyotes, of course, dead cows, and he was perfect.
So did you have to bury a lot?
I did. I had to bury several, but honestly, the winds blew for 2 weeks straight after that hard. And to the point we had a dust bowl going on. You couldn't see 5 foot outside the front door of the house. And so by the time we got to the point where we needed to bury some of our livestock, probably half of them were already buried from the drifting. of the soot and the sand and everything else over the top of them through those draws. You couldn't even find them.
Yeah. So on your house, you didn't have electricity there for a while.
Right.
And it had smoke in it, so how long did it take you to get your house where you could live in it?
I can't even remember the dates now. Probably a month and a half.
So where'd you stay?
I stayed at Tanner Gillum's house here in Ashland, and then at our little bitty house that we have that the kids stay in, is where we ended up staying for that time period. And we had some crews come in, and... They tried to get the smoke out of everything, took all of our textiles, all of our furniture, all of our clothes, left us nothing except for the stuff we had before the fire.
Yeah.
All hats, shoes, boots, everything. Blankets, towels, they were all everything. They took everything. And anyway, we didn't get those back until for probably 45 days, 60 days after the fire.
So did you have lots of volunteers come help?
You know, the outpouring of people was unbelievable. Rural America and even urban America and everybody that showed up really restores your faith in mankind. I mean, just people that you have no idea who they were, people, even the local, let alone the local volunteers, that all we all stick together in these small communities. Unbelievable. Ashland is an unbelievable community. We knew that before, but it just solidified that after the fire. But U.S. in general and agricultural families across the nation in general, sending unbelievable amounts of hay to help us feed our livestock.
Did you get some hay?
I did. Yeah, I got some hay from some trucks that come through. Saved us from having to just completely haul livestock completely off. I also was fortunate enough to have some of my summer grass is actually over by protection, and the fire did not quite reach that far. And so instead of waiting until middle of May to turn out on my summer grass, I ended up hauling things over there the next day off that wheat pasture, hauled panels over there and caught cattle and hauled the cows and millers that we saved back to them and they onto their wheat pasture and hauled mine over to protection. With the help of, again, volunteers and Ashland Feed Yard employees and the manager, Mick Sharp, showed up to help and brought his pens. And then the outpouring ever since has been unbelievable.
So has your grass come back?
It has. The draws look fantastic. The hilltops and hillsides look just fair. But we were blessed, again, by the Lord to have a really good wet summer. Averaged above average rainfall this summer, which really helped our recovery as far as getting the ground covered. The CRP grass didn't come back very good. It was only a two-year-old established set of grass, so it was spotty grass at best. So we had to go in and plant cover crops. It comes at a cost, of course, but had to stop it from blowing somehow. Phil Harden helped in that category, helping get that drilled back. So. But yeah, there was, again, it really restores your faith in humanity, the outpouring. People are unbelievable. Just volunteers and everything that they've given. So,
did you take advantage of the meals that they were preparing in Ashland at the camp or at the school during that time?
We did not. Where we were at, you know, our fire departments, God bless them, were fighting that fire to the south all morning long and trying to protect homes and property down there. I'm one of the fortunate few that was able to save his house just out of blind stupidity and looking for my family and things like that, make sure everybody was okay. But, I mean, the house in Lombardi Ranch to the north of me, a mile, is gone. The three Giles girls lost their homes to the north of me. Filson Cabin, a mile south of me, was gone. Seacat House, a mile and a half to the southeast of me, is gone. The Filson House, to the 4 miles to the southeast of me, is gone. Vernon House, 5 miles to the south of me. Rod and Patty's young place on the Miller Ranch, 4 miles to the south of me. I mean, they're all gone. I mean, it's just blind luck that mines was still had a structure that we could actually build from and that my belongings inside had made it through, so other than smoke damage inside. So we were pretty fortunate in that aspect. So,
yep. So what's your most vivid memory of the fire?
Not knowing where my family was and this sick feeling in my gut when I reached down, my phone was gone, and not knowing where Britt was and couldn't see, even though he should have only been 100 yards from me, and not knowing if he was okay and still driving the right direction. And making sure my wife and kids were out of the house and gone when it come across that field like that, so that fast. Again, that thing should have been 6 hours plus before it ever would have reached my house if the wind had not changed like it did out of the north. Instead, it got there in 30 minutes.
So who were some of the people or agencies that proved helpful during the fire?
During the fire?
Or after?
During the fire, our fire departments were spread so thin because it was such a massive area. There was just nobody available up in the Lexington community. I mean, there weren't any fire departments up there for three or four days after just trying to find hot spots because they had their hands full with the main fire that had started in Oklahoma. You couldn't leave those homes to go fight something that was an afterthought in the north that was moving so fast. They couldn't have drove up there and that fast anyway. So there's no way they could have got up there in time. And then if they would have, they'd have been leaving other homes in Ashland. They couldn't have done that. Afterwards, all the volunteers were extremely helpful. USDA Farm Service Agency has been helpful in trying to get an NRCS and Conservation District. They've been trying to get programs out and try to clarify those programs. The local businesses, the volunteers that have donated fencing are unbelievable. Those were extremely helpful and beneficial. And then just local contractors that I had, Darren Seacat and Keith Carter hired to help get my house back in order. So
have you taken advantage, or did you take advantage of things like the KLA and the Community Foundation?
Yeah, the Community Foundation was unbelievable. The volunteers there and KLA, Ranchers Relief, Community Foundation, and the volunteers down at Ashland Feed and Seed taking hay in, unbelievable amount of hours. But from those volunteers, that went on for months and months and months after. It's still going on to this day in October. I think they're still putting out time in on it, volunteer time in on some of that.
Did you take advantage of, like, the posts and the wire?
Yes, we got some posts and wire, and we're taking advantage of some of that and helped us put quite a bit of fencing in that way.
How long did you stay off work at your job at the bank?
Looking back, I don't know for sure. At least a week, if not 2 weeks. Stock Growers State Bank, where I work, and the Berryman family and Ken LeKay, our president, extremely, extremely helpful, understanding people. Stock Growers State Bank, I know for sure, too, as well as the volunteer work coming out of there. And the people I work with are like family. And they picked up the slack in my absence and have been unbelievable people to lean on, too. Kind of like Ashland in general. It's a great community to live.
So can you perceive of anything positive that has resulted from the fire?
You know, it's brought everybody closer. I guarantee that. Families closer. It makes you appreciate what you have even more, and that everybody is healthy. That more people weren't injured in the fire is unbelievable, an act of God. All the volunteer firemen coming from all over the country coming into this area with all the massive canyons that we have and running around in the smoke, and nobody was hurt. It's unbelievable. But honestly, it really restores your faith in humanity, that the outpouring, tremendous outpouring of generosity coming from across the nation really opens your eyes. You see, you know, news, you turn the news on, and you get a lot of negative a lot of the time, negative publicity a lot of time, and that's what makes the news. And the tremendous outpouring of generosity from people across the nation often gets overlooked, and all the good in the world. And this really brought it out forefront and into the limelight. So, yeah, massive.
Can you do something to prepare for another event like this?
You know, I don't know that you can ever be prepared for something like this as far as how fast it was moving and the massive amount of fire that come through. One thing that I'm trying to do is I'm trying to, within my ground around my house that was in CRP, build into some fire break or food plot situations to where it will at least help protect some of my structures if we ever get to that point again. There's some programs out there like that, and USDA is allowing that to happen as well. Which will be, from what I understand, which is going to be a major benefit in the future if that happens again. So hopefully, I'm going to try to use those programs to keep and maintain that grass to where it will be a lot easier to control in that situation. If that situation can ever be controlled, I mean, you can't. But
so what about the community? What type of plans can they make?
You know, the community, I think as far as the community goes, I think truly there are very few communities that could have handled the emergency that we went through in the fashion that we did. just the key personnel and key businesses that we had in place to be able to handle it, the unbelievable volunteer base that we have in place here, the facilities, including our church camp that we were able to put up volunteers coming in, the high school that we were able to use, and I really think our emergency management crew did a fantastic job for what they had to work with in a limited time and the unprecedented amount of speed and size of the fire, scope of the fire that they were having to deal with. I really don't know how you could have changed anything else unless you can triple the size of your fire departments, and that's just not feasible in our rural community, small rural communities. So
that's not. So do you have any other thoughts or things that you'd like to share about this experience? That
hope it never happens again, and pray it never happens again. And my heart goes out to the gentleman that did lose his life in the fire there. But and just thank God that nobody else was injured or hurt in it. And I guess you know, hopefully next time, as far as again the ground that we've got. That I've got anyway. I'll hopefully have more food plots in it and things like that to where it won't be as severe on my own property, and would never again dream of putting my family out there in harm's way trying to, as much as we care for our livestock, put them out there. Look at Mike, you know, again, Danny Rich, and I thought we had forever and a day to move those baby calves and cows, and at a slow walk. And got back to the house, and I thought I was going to spend the rest of the evening sitting there watching, making sure it didn't come back through, or going north to help others after I got my family out and safe. But I really didn't think it was any urgency at the time, because it's mainly open grassland. But when it changed out of the north, it took all of those homes in the north of me in a matter of minutes, and mine as well. So.
Thank you so much for sharing your experiences with us and letting us what you did.
Thank you, Diane. Appreciate it.
Yep.